This thing on?
Yes.
Testing. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for welcoming me to your very vibrant congregation. My name is, as mentioned, Sammy Bergman. I'm the assistant rabbi of Beit Midrash Zichron Dov. Rabbi Tarchir is coming very frequently. I had the privilege of hanging out with him. It's a pleasure to hang out with you this morning. It is interesting to me that you wanted some comedic entertainment. You asked a rabbi to come and give that to you. Rabbis aren't always known for their comedic skills. You know, there's a story told about a rabbi who was seen as a bit boring in his congregation, and you know, people were falling asleep during his sermons. So he wanted to work on his humor. So he goes to a comedy show, a stand-up comic, and the comic gets up there and says to the light of the crowd, there's a woman who I spanked years of my life in her arms, and she wasn't even my wife. And the crowd is gasped. Who could it be? And then he says, it was my mother! And everyone starts laughing. And the rabbi says, I think I can pull that one off. It doesn't seem so hard. So he goes to the front of the synagogue that Saturday, beginning of the sermon, gets up there and he says, you know, there is a woman, and I spent years of my life in her arms, and it's not even my wife. And the synagogue gasps, the rabbi. And then the rabbi freezes, and he says, what was the punchline? And there's silence for him, and he says, and I don't even know who she was. I'll share another one with you. There's a rabbi goes home to his wife one day, and his wife gives him this box, and she says, don't open the box. No matter what you do, I'm going out today, don't open the box. He says, okay. Sure enough, the curiosity gets the better of him. And so he's looking at this box, says, I'm going to open it. Opens the box, and sees inside the box are three eggs and $3,000. Strange. So his wife comes back home, and he says to his wife, you know, I'm going to admit, curiosity got the better of me, and I opened up the box, I looked at it, and what is going on with the eggs and the money? And she says, oh, it's simple. Every time that you give a bad sermon, I buy an egg. And he says, 20 years, three bad sermons, not so bad. And she says, well, I sell every dozen for a dollar. Reason for joking. So, I don't want to commit an egregious sin of giving you something on your screen and not going to it right away. So what we're going to talk about is humor this morning and positives and negatives of it. So what I'd like to do to begin with is I'm going to show you two clips from Fiddler on the Roof. Are you familiar with Fiddler on the Roof?
Of course.
Yeah. Everyone knows Fiddler on the Roof. So these two clips involve the rabbi. Because, of course, who else do they involve, right? You know, favorite character is going to be the rabbi. And I want you to think, while you watch these clips, as to how do these clips reflect on the rabbi? What do you think of him? Or what do you think of rabbis in general? Remember, not everyone who watches this film or play is familiar with rabbis or Judaism or synagogues or anything. Think of it as someone seeing this film, no background. What do you think of rabbis as you see these clips? Okay, so here's the first.
It's a little bit, yeah, louder. Okay, sorry for the audio, but
if those who didn't hear the jokes, they go to the rabbi and they say, "Rabbi, is there a blessing for the tzar?" And the rabbi says, "Of course. May God bless and keep the tzar far away from us." Okay, keep that in mind. So that's the first. That's the first clip.
Let's go to the second. And again, I apologize if the audio is not perfect. Hopefully we'll still get the point across. So this is a scene, actually, for a bit of background. This is a scene toward the end of the film where one of the main character's children just got a sewing machine. It's the new arrival. Maybe you remember this one? Okay, so I'll just show it for those who haven't. So they asked the rabbi, "Is there a blessing for the sewing machine?" He says, "Of course, it's a blessing for everything." And I've seen Nubi Bodu Katsuajan, like I am Melaboyla, bless the sewing machine. So it's funny, it's funny. So thinking about that, thinking about one's perspective, again, assuming you don't have any background, you're not familiar with rabbis or Jewish customs or blessings or any of those things, and you see these two scenes. If anyone can assist, we don't need a screen anymore, and if anyone wants to turn it off, that'd be great. You see these two scenes. What is your impression of rabbis and Jewish customs?
Great sense of humor.
Okay, so rabbis are funny, okay. Anything else?
It's like a caricature.
A caricature.
Which bothers me.
Right, meaning what might you think? Yeah, could you please? What might you think about this idea of blessings? Based on these two clips, it's kind of like made up, you know, Jewish customs are not so serious, the rabbi just makes it up as he goes along. So the truth is, if you think about it, the context of both of these, just from a strict legal perspective, it's not far off, right? I mean, you think about, is there a blessing for the tsar? Anybody know? So the truth is, we say, or many congregations have the custom to recite a prayer for the welfare of the government every week. And even this sarcastic notion of we don't really want the best for the tsar, keep him away, is also not so far off. There's more to talk about, but the idea of Jews playing for the welfare of the government never was we love the government. It never was the idea. Jews often have not been treated so nicely by their governments. It was more, you know, God makes sure that the government doesn't bother us. Yeah. Right? And there's a lot of depth to that. And the humor really communicates that message in a deep, profound way. And I would add that even on a sewing machine, is there a blessing for a sewing machine? Maybe Shafi on him, right? I think that's legitimate. But someone who doesn't know so much thinks, Jews make it up, they have all sorts of things that they say, but it's really just whatever the rabbi wants. And I think that is sort of the double-edged sword here, which is humor, as we all know, is a very positive thing in our lives. But the question is the answer to humor always an emphatic yes? Should we constantly be looking to embrace as much humor? Should we be going to talk shows or comedy acts or all of these things? Are these things that Judaism looks positively upon? And that's what I want to focus on today. And I'll say, unlike Rabbi Torchina's lecture last week, which sort of ended on an advisory note, I'm hoping we'll end on a more positive, encouraging note. So don't worry, I'm not here to tell you not to ever joke around. If you take a look at the source sheet, for those who have it. So on the first glance, what we say, just without looking at any source subjectively, is humor a positive thing?
Yes.
Of course it is. Why? What positive effects might humor have? Sorry, what was your name?
My name?
Yeah, sorry, don't forget.
Anina.
Anina.
Physiological and psychological benefits.
Okay, as it says in the table, you're very good. So if you take a look at the source here, it says physiological meaning, it's good for you, for your body. Laughing is actually good for your body. There are many studies about this. It's good, it relaxes your muscles, it's good for your blood pressure, it's even a type of exercise for your stomach muscles. There are a lot of physiological benefits to humor. Even, obviously, psychological benefits. It's not so groundbreaking that laughing puts you in a good mood, right? I mean, that's the point of it. It releases tension, enhances memory, improves interpersonal interaction. So there certainly are a lot of very positive effects of humor, right? This is something that we all know. This is why we like humor. It's enjoyable, right? And what could be so bad about having a good time? And the truth is, if you look at classical Jewish sources, although I'm not going to argue that the Torah or the Talmud is the funniest book, right? I don't think that if you're looking for a good laugh, you open up a Talmud. I would recommend it. You will find a few jokes, even if there are just a few of them. I mean, it's a book of law. You're not going to expect too many of them. But take a look at source number two. This is actually from this week's Torah reading. Right? In this week's Torah reading, the Jews get out of Egypt, and they're running away from the Egyptians, and Pharaoh is chasing them with his army. And the Jews get to the Dead Sea, right? Or the Red Sea, rather. And then they see the sea on one side. And they see the Egyptians on the other side. And they're like, where do we go now? So, look at source 2. As far as you near the Israelites caught sight of the Egyptians, advancing upon them. Greatly frightened, the Israelites cried out to the Lord. And they said to Moses, was it for want of graves in Egypt that you brought us to die in the wilderness? If you think about it, I mean, it's dark, it's sarcastic, but it's actually kind of funny, you know? If you add in the words, poetic license here, if you add in the words, new Moshe, it's a little better. New Moshe, there weren't enough graves in Egypt, you had to bring us here to die in the wilderness. It's sarcasm. And in fact, Rabbi Shimshon Rafal Hirsch notes on this verse that in a dark time, and this is something that's pretty emblematic of Jewish humor throughout our history, we're often in pretty trying situations, and it's not so easy. And one way of getting through it is to make light of it, a bit of wit, some sarcasm to get through it. And the truth is, if you look in the Gemara, there are some pretty humorous stories. There are a few of them for you here. Take a look at source number 3. So this one's about Bar Kappara. Bar Kappara was known for his humor and his how he liked to joke around. So if you look here at the story here, this is the Davidson Edition translation, source number 3 in Yehuda 50-51. It says, on a day when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi would laugh, calamity would befall the world. As Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's sufferings would atone for the sins of the Jewish people. Okay, apparently he was a pretty big deal, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, not even me, but when he suffered, it was so powerful that the Jewish people would receive atonement. He therefore said to Bar Kappara, do not cause me to laugh, and I will give you 40 sah of wheat in return. Just don't make me laugh. So what does he do? Bar Kappara said to him, don't worry, I'm going to get my money. The master will see that any sah I wish I will take. So he takes a large palm basket, he puts it on his head, okay, and he smears it with tar. But you can imagine a rabbi coming into the room with a basket on his head, which is full of tar. Looks a little bit crazy, right? And he goes to the rabbi and he says, let the master measure for me the 40 sah of wheat that I'm ordered by you. Meaning, pay up. Here it is. You know, put it in the basket on his head. So what's your Yehuda HaNasi do when he sees the rabbi walking into the room with a basket on his head? He laughs. It's pretty funny. And he says, didn't I tell you not to make me laugh? I would have paid you the 40 sah. He says back, yeah, but you owe me 40 sah anyway. So pay up. Okay, the point is that he put a basket on his head to make Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi laugh. I might find the next source to be more humorous. Actually, well,
we'll go to source 5, we'll go back to source 4. Source number 5, you have a story, if you look at it inside, where there's a fine imposed upon someone for giving somebody else a knock in the head. So the Gemara said, whether it happened or not, it's not the important part now. So somebody gives someone, I think it's Hanan Bisha, Hanan, evil one, he gives someone a smack in the head. So the rabbi says, you got to pay him the equivalent of half a dollar for giving him that. It didn't damage him, but for hitting him, you got to give him half a dollar. He only has $1. So essentially, he says, I don't want to break a dollar. So he gives him another knock in the head, and he gives him the whole thing. You know, get my money's worth once I'm at it. It's funny. It's actual slapstick humor. And if you look at source number 4, I brought the Hebrew here because it's much more humorous if you know the Hebrew. Otherwise, we'll make do. The Gemara here is talking about the following concern, right? We know before Passover, we're supposed to rid our house of all chametz. And what do we do to do that? How do we make sure that we don't have any chametz? And right now, a feather, right? You take the feather and the candle, you go throughout the house, you look for all the crumbs. So the Gemara wonders, what if you do it early? Should we worry that a weasel or some sort of rodent is going to go into your house and take a crumb and move it elsewhere? Okay, that's the concern of the Gemara. So there's one of the opinions is, well, it depends. If it's on the 13th of Nisan, which is 2 days before Passover, then the weasel's not worried, because he knows that, you know, the Jews still have more chametz, more bread to be eaten. They're not going to worry about finding any breadcrumbs. By the 14th of Nisan, since they know, right, of course, since they know that Passover's coming, so then they're afraid, and then they go to look for the crumbs, to which the response of the Gemara is the weasel a prophet, and he knows whether or not the Jews are going to bring more bread into their house? But the funny part of it is, if you look in the Hebrew, the words for is the weasel a prophet are v'chi chulda nevi'ahi. And chulda, the name chulda, which also means weasel, is the name of one of the female prophetesses. It is the name of a prophet. Chulda is a nevi'ah. Right? So it's ironic. The Gemara says it in that way. Chulda nevi'ahi? The answer is yes, but not in this context. Not the funniest joke, I'm not gonna lie. You can look for better sources of humor, but the point is that, you know, none of these are necessarily laugh out loud funny. The point though is there is a certain humor already in Jewish and rabbinical sources. However, we have a problem. And the problem starts with, take a look at the next page, source starts with Isaiah. So Isaiah is a prophet, and he's criticizing the Jews for their bad behavior, right? He's criticizing them for idolatry and all sorts of other things they're doing wrong. And what does he say? Therefore, refrain from mockery. Don't joke around too much. Don't be scornful. Don't mock. Lest your bonds be tightened. So this is the prophet here telling us that we should be worried or we should be careful not to make a mockery of things. Now, although it's in a particular context, if you take a look at sources number 7 and number 8, Gemara in Sanhedrin, in source number 7, says, all types of mockery are forbidden, except for mockery of idol worship, which is permitted. But it says all, now we'll get to the second half of that statement, but it says forbidden. Mockery, making fun of things, is not just inadvisable, says the Gemara, it's forbidden. And if you look at source number 8, this is Rabbi Shonar, Rabbi Yeshaya, the son of Rabbi Eliyahu, Eliyahu Trani, not the most well-known, but a formidable commentary, not to say the least. And he says, what is the Gemara basing this on? Why are all types of mockery forbidden? It's the pasuk in Yeshaya. It's Isaiah. Isaiah tells us, don't mock. Don't make fun of things. It's a problem to make fun of things. That's not advisable, it's forbidden to do so. So what do we do? What do we do? You know, there's all this Jewish humor. You know, the Jew always jokes. There's a joke about someone who's in the hospital. He's in a hospital about a Jewish person, and the nurse goes to him and says, is everything okay? He says, no, I can't kvetch. She means to complain, for those who don't know. So they say, oh, is there a problem with the lighting in the room? No, I can't fetch. And then she says, the nurse says, is the food okay? Yes, but I can't kvetch. And then she says, is my service okay? He says, yes, but I can't kvetch. The point is the Jew needs to kvetch, at least according to that joke. And the Jew needs to be able to joke. We've always joked around. So, well, what do we do about the fact that mockery is forbidden? Why should it be forbidden? What's so bad about mocking people or mocking anything? What are the problems with mockery? What do you think? Yeah?
Well, you're making fun of another person's serious things.
Okay, so you mentioned two things there. What was your name?
My name is Fagy.
So Fagy mentions two things. You're making fun of a person's serious things. So I hear two ideas there. Number one very obvious flaw with mocking is that you could be making fun of a person. Right, that's a problem. That's you can't make fun of people. You can't embarrass people. You can't humiliate people. There are many prohibitions associated with that, as we'll relate to later. And you also mentioned something else, which is making fun of what? Serious things. Right? There are some things that are not meant to be made fun of. They're actually serious. What happens? Thinking back to our movie, what happens if you make fun of the rabbi too much? What's the result of that?
Disrespect.
Who's going to take the rabbi seriously? He's always getting the raw end of the joke. If you take a look at the source number 10, I think this highlights the issue even more prominently. So this is a pretty long Gemara, but I'd like to actually read it together with you. I think it's an important one. And this will be the springboard for our discussion. So this is source number 10. It's the Talmud in Brachot 38 to 31. And tell me if this reminds you of any customs that you see in Jewish life. So Mar, son of Ravina, made a wedding feast for his son. And you saw the sages who were excessively joyous. Is it good to be joyous at a wedding feast?
Yeah.
Sounds like it is. But you saw they were really, really happy, excessively. Now, I don't know what excessively means. I guess we could all draw a line for ourselves what excessively means. But it says excessively joyous. He brought a valuable cup worth 400 zuz and broke it before them. Right? He sees them laughing, they're celebrating what to do, takes the cup, smashes it. And then they got very sad. What does that remind you of? What do we do at weddings? You break the glass, right? You break the glass. Now, of course, nowadays, what do we associate with breaking the glass? What do you do when a glass breaks in your house? Mazel tov, right? It's like, yay, the glass broke. Perfect. But the point of breaking the glass, as the commentary say on this Gemara, is actually the opposite. Why do you think he broke the glass? So it actually doesn't mention very good. That might be one idea, mentioning, remembering destruction. But why in this Gemara do you break the glass? Yeah.
Shock people back into reality.
Shock people back into reality. Meaning, what were they doing wrong?
They were too
happy. Too happy. Don't be too happy. And then he breaks the glass. The Gemara gives another story. Here, further in the end of line number 2 here in source 10. The Gemara also relates, Rashi made a wedding feast for his son and he saw the sages who were excessively joyous. He brought a cup of extremely valuable white glass and broke it before them and they became sad. Now this one is even worse. Similarly, the Gemara relates, the sages said to Rav Hamnuna Zuti at the wedding feast of Mar, son of Ravina, let the master sing for us, right? Sing a song, Rabbi. So once he starts singing, you know, Mahaba Nagila, right? You know, you could have thought about Simondo Mazzo, nope. Since he believed that the merriment had become excessive, he said to them, singing, woe unto us, for we shall die. Woe unto us, for we shall die. Not the most catchy song, right? I don't know what tune you use, but I don't think it really matters. I'm not going to recreate that for you tonight, right, this afternoon, this morning. So they said to him, what should we respond? Like, what's the other line in the song? Like, you say, you know, we shall die, what do we say back? And he says, he said to them, you should respond, where is Torah, and where is mitzvah that protect us? Not the most upbeat song, but again, what's he trying to do? Why is he singing this ominous song? To bring them down. You're getting too happy. Don't be so happy. Don't be excessively joyous. And furthermore, if you look at the end of this Gemara, essentially the Gemara concludes that it's always inappropriate to fill one's mouth with joy. If those who are familiar with the song Shir HaMa'alot, anyone know Shir HaMa'alot? So I'll say the Hebrew for a second. We say, Az Yimalei Sechok Pinu El Shamin Erlina. Az Yimalei Sechok Pinu means then, referring to when. What do you think then refers to? Think of a time in the future. So then, Messiah comes, you know, when things are good, when everything is clear, then our mouths will be filled with mirth. Says Gemara, that's then. But now, it's forbidden. It's forbidden to fill one's mouth with joy in this world, says the Gemara. And it's codified in source number 11 in the book, the Code of Jewish Law. Right? It says the source number, it is forbidden for a person to fill their mouth with mirth in this world. So we have a problem. I think we have a problem. What do we do? On the one hand, clearly humor is beneficial, it's enjoyable, everyone likes a good joke. You know, everyone's excited when they hear the rabbis talking about humor. Somehow it doesn't get as, eating dietary laws and the laws of reading the Torah aren't as exciting as humor. I don't know. But, so we love humor. We enjoy it. It's part of our lives. It helps us get through life. And yet, here the Talmud is saying, it's forbidden. At least on some level, in some contexts, it's forbidden. So my question to you is, what do we do? Or how do we navigate this issue? Is there anything you could think of, when or when it might not be permitted? Or just think of it, why would the Gemara say such a thing that we can't fill our mouths with mirth, with joy in this world? What's the problem with getting too happy? I won't use the word happy. What's the problem with getting too lightheaded or too celebratory? Yes?
Remove yourself from reality.
Okay, which reality?
Trouble.
Trouble. What types of trouble?
Sorrow.
Sorrow. Yes. Okay, anything else? Any other? So, yes. I know what you're saying.
Every day is little problems.
There's problems. There's problems. There's problems in the world. The world is, as we know, the reason we needed the humor was because, you know, we really need it. You know why we need it? Because there are problems in the world. Is it appropriate to get so lost in joking around and humor that you forget the fact that, you know what, life ain't perfect? You know, it's far away from perfect. Is that what you said?
What's wrong with forgetting?
What's wrong with forgetting that? What do you think?
You're going to have the same problems. You may as well,
Well, that's interesting. So let me think of the... Is your point is that you're going to have the same problems anyway, might as well not think about them.
Until you have to.
So my question is, I mean, depending on, depending on the circumstance, but my remark would be, I don't think we're necessarily talking about something that you're trying to avoid doing, but, and certainly there's a certain health benefit of not getting fixated on it. But if someone has a real problem in their life, or even not their lives, you know someone who's very sad about something, whatever that may be, and they're a friend of yours, and they're part of your life in a real way. I'm not saying that it should be on the forefront of one's consciousness. I wouldn't argue that. But would it be? Is it advisable to just forget that your friend is in that sorrow?
Not to mention
something. Yes.
You can't take on all the problems of the world on your shoulders.
100%.
You have to relax and enjoy some of your life.
That is a great point. And the question is this negating any relaxing or joy? Or are we saying that of course you have to relax and enjoy yourself sometimes, but there's a limit. And there's an extent where, at some point, getting too carried away in the notion of trying to make myself laugh and laugh and laugh and be merry takes it too far. But are there any other thoughts as to why, when humor might be dangerous or excessive? Yes?
I There should always be a balance in life in everything.
100%. We need balance. The first thing, I mean, you know, in certain contexts, it's clear that people sort of overdo it. There's a context for everything, as we'll see, a time and place for everything. To be the type of person that is always looking to make a joke of something. Meaning, it's one thing to every once in a while joke around or mock something that, you know, we could all take a little bit less seriously. It's another thing to be the type of person who always looks to make a joke of something. Because what does that show about that person?
I think they're frightened.
Frightened, okay. Not serious, yes.
Insensitive.
Or not understanding what the situation might really be. In other words, I'm going to give an example that my husband has Parkinson's, and he has a tendency to fall or lose his balance. In Stratford last year, somebody thought he was drunk and commented, oh, that guy had too much to drink.
We have a story about that. Everybody know that story? It's the story in the Bible about Hannah. Exactly. Hannah, the mother of Samuel, who's praying in the temple, and the priest, you know, the priest sees her, and he says, what are you doing, drunkard? Why are you, apparently she was praying so intently, and she wasn't saying things out loud. She was just muttering them to herself. And he misjudged and thought that she wasn't something, you know, he misconstrued the situation and accused her of really not the best behavior. Which, by the way, also relates to last week's talk, which is everything needs to be in moderation. Drinking also, right, is something that we need to control. So if you take a look at source number 12 and 13, I think they discussed the two reasons, I think two primary reasons for this general idea. What is behind the Gemara's comment here that we should never, in this world, it says, in this world, remember that statement, it is forbidden to fill one's mouth with joy in this world. What is the logic, the reasoning behind that prohibition? You take a look at source number 12. It's actually from the Gaonim. I think it puts it in an enlightening way. It says, a parable can be drawn to a student who sits before her teacher. If she sees her teacher in pain, she will feel the pain with it. From the time the sanctuary was destroyed, there is no joy before him being God. Therefore, it's forbidden for a person to fill their mouth with mirth in this world. What is the point of the parable? What's the idea behind this statement? Yes?
Well, people should at some time be aware of other people's pain, of your family's pain, or the people you live with. You should be sensitive to other people's needs and wants and not be laughing all the time.
Right, meaning, I think the point is, it's talking about the temple specifically, and there's a debate as to whether or not this idea is a response to the destruction of the temple and exile, and it's a certain respect for the dire state of the Jewish people are in, or it's general. But I think there's something to be said about, look, there are problems in the world. There are problems in the world. Does that mean you constantly need to have those problems at the forefront of one's consciousness? Certainly not. But when one gets to the point where they're so overcome with laughter and giddiness and revelry, where it's when they're filled their mouth with joy, memale sakopinu, right? When they're totally overcome with this sense of it's so, so funny. What is that? At some point, it's insensitive. You have to always have some of these, somewhere in the back of your mind, you need to recognize that the world is not a perfect place and there are very, very sad things that we should have to keep in the forefront of, in somewhere in the back of the recesses of our consciousness. The second idea here, which is, I think, even more practical, and that's the idea of Rabbi Yonah Grandi. He was Moshe Chaim Zara. 18th century Amsterdam, well known for a few of his books, the Mesila Yesharim, The Paths of the Just, is a book very commonly studied in Yeshivot to work on ethical behavior and moral behavior. And he says as follows, and it's pretty, and the truth is, it's pretty intense. The second detrimental factor, laughter and levity, is very severe. He's talking about here, and the context is, the importance of acquiring the trait of being careful, of thinking before one acts, of being calculated, of making calculated decisions. And he says, you know what one trait is that prevents one from being calculated, from making careful decisions? Frivolity. Being someone who's constantly making a joke out of everything. He says, for one who is immersed in these is like one immersed in the great sea, from which it is extremely difficult to escape. For behold, laughter destroys a man's heart. By the way, I try to alter between female and male references here, but this is a man's heart, so don't worry. It's laughter destroys a man's heart, until reason and knowledge no longer rule in him. He becomes like a drunkard. He becomes like a drunkard, or a madman, whereby it is impossible to give counsel or guidance, for they are incapable of accepting any direction. Meaning, a person has a character flaw, something that they should fix. Whatever it is, they get angry too often, they're not attentive to them, to their friends or their spouses, they're insensitive. Whatever it is, you try to help them overcome that. You point it out to them. You tell them, you know, you should really work on something, or the way that you talk makes people feel uncomfortable, or it makes them feel bad about themselves. If a person's always joking around, always, everything's a joke, everything's an excuse to make a wisecrack, right? What's the response going to be? Are they going to be receptive to that criticism? No, certainly not, because nothing is serious. Everything's a joke. A person's always laughing. Come on, it's not a big deal. You know? Think about the following. A rabbi gets up, anyone, gets up and gives an inspiring speech. Inspiring speech. And you're captivated. And then at the very end of the speech, they stutter. You know? All it takes is one comment from someone in the audience. Hey, did you hear how the rabbi stuttered at the end of the speech? Ha! And what does that do? What does that do? It negates the whole speech. Could have been the most inspiring, informative speech in the world. And one wisecrack. One wisecrack negates the whole thing. It completely transforms the experience that the next morning you wake up and what do you remember the rabbi's speech? Ha! Wasn't it funny when he stuttered at the end of the speech? And that's a shame. So the point is that although laughter is certainly sometimes a very positive element, we all enjoy it, but there are times where it's inappropriate if one has the character trait in which they're constantly joking around, then it's hard to take anything seriously. And life is serious. You know, as much as we like to be in a good mood, we like to, I personally like to chill out, I like to joke around with friends. But the point is that that doesn't take away from the seriousness of life. We should be focusing on growing and on improving ourselves and working. And a constant necessity of necessity to joke around and make light of a situation takes away from that. So what can we do? Right? I want to certainly get to the point. I just want to check what time we have. Okay, we're great. So, what rules can we use to govern this this discussion? I'd like to ask you, if I were to, again, what I think we're suggesting is that, on the one hand, excessive humor is going to be inappropriate, that to have a character trait in which one constantly looks to make a joke or make light of situations is inappropriate. I would even argue to go to the type of event where the atmosphere is one of making light of serious topics, joking about things that are not a joke. Because there are certain things that are not a joke. Joking about certain things that are not a joke is inappropriate. So how do we know, or what can we do to ensure that the humor or the joy, the joke, is one that is a positive and wholesome spiritual experience, not a negative one? What are some factors?
Balance.
Balance, okay, that's a good one. What would be balance?
If you're going to join somebody, think how it would affect you if it was coming the other way.
Right. That's a way of being sensitive. Okay, anything else? How do we make sure that that what we're doing is just innocent humor? I don't think anyone will say that. To make a joke every once in a while is a problem. Yeah.
I guess I'm having a little bit of difficulty.
Okay.
Because the topic was humor and our sources. And I think if you have life without humor, there's no optimism. And as human beings, we need that.
100%. I'm going to get to that. We're going to get to the good parts of humor in the next. Don't worry. But right now, before I get to that, we're going to, I just want to find a way. And that's what I want to get to. I want to get find a way, because I agree with what you said, which is that humor is important. So how are we humorous? How do we joke around in a way that doesn't violate these important principles that I think are also important of being serious and sensitive and thoughtful?
You have to be smart. You have to be clever, and you have to size up the whole thing before you make your little comment that's going to make someone laugh. It has to be clever.
Thoughtfulness. I think that's an important point sometimes. And I think this is something to note about the, if you think about humor nowadays, or a typical comic, what ends up happening is that the point is the laugh, and the means of getting to that laugh is sort of often inconsequential. Whatever it is to make somebody laugh, that's what we'll do. And I think that is the sort of perspective we're talking about avoiding here. That you have to be thoughtful, be clever about the way that you joke around. Not all jokes are necessarily worth it. So let's take a look at some of the different factors I have here. Okay? So number one, I think it's not what we're doing, it's the balance perspective out of it. Right? So this is Moses Maimonides in source number 12. And here he's talking about the golden mean. Right? You know about the golden mean? It's really an Aristotelian concept, which is that you never want to be on the extreme. All character traits, whatever it is, whether it has to do with one's, you know, being modest versus being arrogant, or having avarice or constantly spending money, right? All of these different traits need to be balanced. You always want to be in the middle. Okay? Now, how does that have to do with happiness? Says the Rambam in source 14, men shall not be frivolous and sarcastic, nor sad and pessimistic, but of good cheer. Right? So what's the balance? The balance is not even, you know, be stone-faced and, like, serious. What's the proper character trait? To be of good cheer. You should be in a good mood. Right? That's the type of thing that you want to have, generally, in terms of the way you conduct yourself. You should try to get to the point where you're happy. Not too serious and not too sarcastic. The person, thus said the wise men, frivolity and lightheadedness train man for prostitution. Another statement from Chazal, that if a person is always, or a man is always frivolous and joking, well, it can lead to some pretty grave consequences. And they have commanded men shall not be boisterous in laughter, nor sad and forlorn, but receive every person with a kind expression upon his face. Again, you don't want to be, you walk around, you're always in a bad mood. No one wants to see someone like that. No one wants to be around someone who's always frowning. You like being around people who are joyous and cheerful. But we also don't want to be the person who's always joking around, even in inappropriate circumstances, okay? So I think number one, that is the first fact to think of is balance. Is this overdoing it? You know, are there certain things that we shouldn't be joking about? But that being said, I think there are certain jokes, even in that religion, that do, they're not overdoing it. They make us think of it in a, you know, more positive way. There's even a genre, you know, I see I'll throw in a joke here, it's been a while. So, somebody goes up to heaven, I guess, in a dream, and they're talking to God, and they say, you know, God, is it true that to you a second is like 1,000 years? That your second takes 1,000 years? He says, yeah. Then he says, you know, God, is it true that for you $1 billion is like a penny? So God says, yeah. So then he says, God, could I have a penny? He says, sure, just in a second. So the point is, though, I don't think that necessarily doesn't castigate God in any way. It just says, you know, God can joke around too in his own way, which we'll get to. Talk about God joking around. Yoshev Hashemayim Vesach, God sits in heaven and jokes around. And I think, again, there's going to be a balance between when am I joking about the topic. If I'm joking about religion, and there's loads of jokes about religion that we could say, and I'm joking about it, does it get to a point where it's not just trying to have a good time, but what I'm really saying is it's not such a serious thing. You don't have to, you know, everything's really a joke. Religion's really a joke. We can just joke around about it. And you have to figure out, a person needs to know where to draw the line. I think the second thing to think about, I think this is very important, I think it should be clear, but unfortunately it isn't always, and that is the content of one's humor. And I think nowadays it's certainly true that comedians can be more discerning in terms of the content of what they're talking about. And, you know, the fact that it's just a joke isn't an excuse to, number one, slander or embarrass or humiliate anyone publicly. You know, it's just a joke doesn't actually cut it. There are two prohibitions, at least, associated with speaking negatively and disparagingly about people in public. There's, of course, the prohibition of, anyone? Lashon hara, evil speech. That's one thing to consider. And again, evil speech is a problem even if it's true. It doesn't matter that it's still evil speech, as long as you're damaging the reputation. And furthermore, there's something called onat devarim, which means using your words to make someone feel bad. These are things that we need to be aware of. We can't be joking around about people if they're the subject, when it's going to make them embarrass or humiliate them or damage their reputation. And two, is the content vulgar? And I think this is a really important one. That the Jewish tradition frowns very heavily upon vulgar speech, or speech about sensitive, private topics. There are certain things that are not meant to be joked around. And the Gemara even says, we all know, or we know what happens when a wife and a husband are together for the first time, but it's still inexcusable to joke about it. And I think this is something certainly that we need to keep in mind when participating in modern day humor, that people who are not as sensitive to the things we are sensitive to will often go way, way overboard. And the point is, the fact that it's a joke doesn't make it okay. Yes?
There's a word that we grew up with, F-U-C-K, okay, which you just never said, and it was a very rude thing to say. I watch television, or I watch a movie, and it's every other word.
Yes.
It's amazing.
I can't agree with you more. I think I happen to be very passionate about it.
Part of the language.
It's we could give a different talk about why vulgar speech is inappropriate, but I 100% agree with you, and I think it's a sad state of affairs that we've gotten to this point. I mean, we can note the halftime show in this Super Bowl. I didn't watch it, I never did, but, you know, the fact that people are saying, what do you mean, you can find this everywhere, it's no different than any typical concert, says more about what a typical concert is like, and less about the fact that people are being too, you know, puritanical in their objections. So I think number two, the content is important. I think three, I wrote context, but I also think motivation. Why are you doing it? And here, let's think of a few positive elements of humor. Take a look at verse 17. We can just reference it quickly. We say, "L'kol zman la'et tachat hashamayim." For Shlomo HaMelech says in Kohelet that there's a time and place for everything, and included in that list of things there is a time for. A time for weeping and a time for laughing. There are times to laugh. There are. We should be laughing every once in a while when appropriate. There's also a time for crying, and you need to get those goals right. But the truth is that humor can be a very powerful tool. If you look at source number 18, and I think this is something that we often experience, the Gemara talks about how before a lecture, some of the rabbis would make a joke. They'd open up their lecture with a joke, a milta de dichluta. And why do you think they open up with a joke? Why is it helpful? Why did I open up with a few jokes today? Because then people relax, and it creates a good mood. It creates a certain communication and comfort between the teacher and the students. Now, it actually says the Gemara, they were a little bit more intense back then. Then after the start of the lecture, they were very serious and in awe of their teacher. But the point is that making a joke helps people be comfortable and can open up the mind. Once someone's already in a good mood, they're more receptive toward the lessons and the wisdom you want to share with them. Furthermore, if you look at source number 19, I think this is actually a very beautiful one.
Yeah.
I find it very inspiring. So the Gemara here talks about Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet. Elijah pops up in the Talmud pretty frequently. He makes his appearances. And so he's talking with Rabbi Baruch, one of the Amoraim. And Rabbi Baruch asks Elijah, who here among all the people in the marketplace, right? Imagine a packed marketplace, people are shopping and buying. And he says, well, who here is going to the world to come? Fortunately, Eliyahu HaNavi is not too enthusiastic about pointing out people. Finally, he says, those two people, they are going to the world to come. They are people of the world to come. So what do these two people do then? They're so special that among all the people in the marketplace, they get to go to the world to come. He goes to them and he says, what do you do? So what do you do? What do you do for an occupation? They say, we're jokers. We make people laugh. We're bat chanim. And when people are arguing, we try to make peace, try to make them happy with each other. Right? Comedy, when used appropriately, is an incredible tool for making people who are sad, who are down, feel better. And that is such a powerful tool. It's a paradigmatic example of someone who gets to the world to come. And I think there's another idea here, which is beyond just making people who are down happy. Throughout our history, and I think you go back to our example in the Torah reading this week with the Jews are cornered, there's this gap in Jewish history between our perceived state as the chosen nation and the way that actually plays out in real life, right? As heavy as a pillar on the roof. God, I know we're the chosen nation, but couldn't you choose someone else for once, right? The point is that there's this gap where we're supposed to be enjoying everything and having, and be on top of the world, and yet we're not. We're often downtrodden and oppressed and under the rule of others. And one way to deal with that tension between what you expect and what is real is humor. In fact, I think one of the most powerful elements of humor is when you're expecting one thing and the opposite happens, right? And what did anyone have time for me? I'm sorry, I'm going to watch.
5-2.
So we'll leave with one last joke in the last perspective. I hope this one goes over okay. So there's two Jewish men are talking outside the synagogue. And one says to another, I got the most depressing letter. A son of mine sent me a letter. He says he's going to Jerusalem. He's going to convert. He's going to leave the religion. He's going to convert to Christianity. So the other one responds to him, it's so, believe it or not, now that you mention it, I got the same letter. My son also told me he's going to Jerusalem, and he's going to convert to Christianity. So the world creator said they go to the rabbi, and they say to the rabbi, we've got to talk to you. Rabbi says, what's wrong? And they say, we're both too good Jewish fathers. We tried to raise our children in the tradition, and they both sent us this letter that says that they're going to Jerusalem, and they're going to convert to Christianity. And the rabbi says, funny that you mentioned it, but I got the same letter. Someone sent me a letter also. And he said, my son sends me a letter. He says he's going to Jerusalem. He's going to convert. And so they sit there and they fast for 3 days and they're mourning and they put on sackcloth. They put ashes on their heads and they're crying. And on the third day, a light shines down from heaven. And they hear the voice of God. And God says, What's wrong, my children? Why are you fasting? And the rabbi says, God, you won't believe it. We tried our best to raise our children in your tradition, and we both got letters from Jerusalem telling us our children want to convert to Christianity. And God says, funny you should mention it. So what's funny about that joke, a lot, but what's funny about that joke is that you don't expect, because laughter is often when you have that perspective, that what you expected to happen was the exact opposite. Take a look at source number 20 for a second. You know, what's the, I'll leave you with this. What is the most joyous day of the year, would you argue? Purim, of course. And Purim, some argue that it's the exception to this. We seem to be excessively joyous on Purim. We do all sorts of funny things. The Megillah itself is a funny sort of story. Right, we're wearing masks and we're dressing up, and there are spiels and plays and costumes and jokes. And why? Why isn't that against this whole talk we've been giving today? So when you look at source number 20, your partner says, because what's the theme of Purim really? It's that benahapo, it's that things are not as they seem. And the joke is that there's evil in the world. There are evil people in the world, there are evil nations in the world. They think right now they're on top of the world. They think that everything is good, we've conquered the Jewish people, and they're done, and they're never going to come back to their promised land, and there's never going to be a redemption. And on Purim, we look at them and we say, you know, as much as things seem bad right now, really we know the joke's going to be on them. The joke's going to be on them. We'll get that last laugh. Because God, as we said, God's sitting up there in heaven laughing at them. And even though right now they think things are good, but really they're not. Really right now, on Purim, we have the strength to laugh at the situation. To make humor, to make light of the fact that the way things are the exact scene, are exact opposite of the way they truly are. Take a look at the source number 21, we say in Isha Chayil and Mishlei, the song that many sing on Shabbat night, right? We say, when do we finally laugh? The last day, when everything becomes clear, that we have that perspective, looking back at everything, that's where the humor comes. And so I think the conclusion is, and I think that humor can be effective. It is a tool. It can get us to the next world to come. It can make people happy who otherwise aren't. It can enable us to take ourselves a little bit less seriously and to laugh at the things that really bother us so that we can function. And the hope is that if we do these things right, we wait for the day where we finally get that last laugh. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Thank you.